want to welcome back into the studio with us. Been a little while since we had him here with us, and that is our United States Senior Senator from the state of South Carolina, Lindsey Graham, who's back here with us. It is nice to see you, young man.
Thank you, young man. You're doing good. I'm really proud of what you built here. It's been a it was tough getting started, but you really thrived and survived.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate that very much. Well, again, I love seeing you here, and you look well and good.
Need to get you some glasses. Other than that, you're in good shape.
Let's talk about what an amazing 4 or 5 days it's been for this country when you think about has happened and who's been here.
Head spinning. So how do you end a war? There's two ways to end a war. Military victory, where one side defeats the other. That's not going to happen in Ukraine. Russia is not going to take Kyiv, and the Ukrainians are not going to evict all the Russians out of Ukraine. So the other way you end a war is you find a diplomatic solution, and that starts with talking. And Donald Trump has gotten the sides talking, so let's hope and pray it works.
I want you to take me through, though, each of the steps that have happened, just because of how amazing it is.
My head is spinning.
Right. First, he shows up in Alaska, and then within 48 hours, he gets world leaders to come from all over the planet to his office.
Only Donald Trump can do this. So he goes to Alaska, and he's flying back, and he calls me about 10:30 at night. And I said, "Where are you?" He says, "Well, I'm flying back." He said, "You want to play golf tomorrow?" "Play golf. You got to be dead. You get in at 3. And I said, "Let's take a day off." So anyway, he talked about the meeting. Now, why did Putin go to Alaska?
Mm-hmm.
Not to see how Alaska was doing after he sold it to him.
Right.
You know, I've been missing Alaska. He went to Alaska because the pressure was mounting. Two things Trump did. He started selling weapons to Ukraine. And that told the Russian military they're going to have high-end weapons for a long time to come. And when Trump put a 50% tariff on India for buying Russian oil.
Mm-hmm.
You're starting to hit the customer base. That's why he went to Alaska.
So he shows up in Alaska. They have their meeting.
Right.
And obviously it goes well enough that there's a step two.
That's the hope, right? You know, points of failure. So he goes to Alaska. He gets to see a B-2 up close.
Right.
If you've
that was
ever
awesome,
seen one
way.
Up close, it does stick with you.
Yeah.
So that was typical Trump. I laughed my ass off. Just
yeah,
so
that's amazing.
Sorry about that, everybody. I laughed very hard. Yeah. And anyway, so now he meets with European leaders, mm-hmm. and Zelensky at the White House. Zelensky's wearing a suit. That's progress. It went very well. I talked to Zelensky. I talked to the president this morning. They're supposedly having a meeting between Putin and Zelensky. And if they don't kill each other, there'll be a third meeting. So keep your fingers crossed.
Yeah. And so here's the thing. You know the players very well. Yeah, very well. Here's the question, though. Do you think anything, even if it gets signed, do you trust Vladimir Putin?
No, given his behavior,
right.
No. But it's not about trusting him. It's about getting a deal you can live with that is good as you can get. You got to take risk in life. Getting up every day is a risk. But I think we can get a deal we can live with. But whether or not Putin's ready to do it, I don't know. We'll know more. If he actually meets with Zelensky and that goes well, then I think you're well on your way to ending the war. If it doesn't go well, or if he backs out of the meeting, Trump has to follow through with severe consequences. And this is where I come in.
Right.
So I've got a bill that has 85 co-sponsors. There are only 100 in the Senate. That would allow the president to put tariffs on people who buy Russian oil and gas from 0% to 500%. So Brazil, China, and India are the big purchasers of Russian oil and gas. They buy it cheap. They use it to benefit their economy. It really is blood money because it keeps the war machine going. So he put 50% on India,
right.
But that was executive action. I think we could get 90 votes for my bill. Then he'd be good to go in court. So if we don't get some progress here in the next couple of weeks, I think you'll see Trump turning to consequences.
When it comes to that, I mean, there's really nothing else he can do at this point other than I've brought you guys together. I've tried to facilitate
that's
it
what
that
I
way.
Told him today.
Yeah. If it doesn't work,
it doesn't. You tried, Ms. Brett. You're doing everything
right.
You know how to do. You reached out to both sides. You got a relationship with Putin. I could care less. If he likes Putin, that's fine. If Putin likes him, that's fine. I'm just looking for an outcome. But if this meeting goes well and we have a third meeting with Trump in it, I think we'll get a deal. again, if there's a point of failure, you got to live up to what you said you would do. So the tool I'm creating for President Trump is congressionally authorized sanctions that will stick in court. And I've got a new open front here against Putin. About 19,000 Ukrainian children have been abducted or kidnapped by Russian forces, taken out of Ukraine. I've got a bill that would label Russia a state-sponsored terrorism under U.S. law if they don't return those kids.
That's game-changing.
So that's where Melania comes in. And so, yeah, we're giving the president some tools and some leverage.
Good. Let me ask you about it. It's just from the – you've been around the game of this so long. The idea that he can pull this together.
Amazing.
And it is. I mean, again, there's so many people out there that have the derangement syndrome and all that crap.
That's right.
And I get that, okay? No matter what he does, I've said over and over again, he could cure cancer and someone's going to bitch and moan that he didn't cure Alzheimer's the same day.
Well, they'll say millions die before Trump cures cancer.
Right.
Yeah,
right,
that's the world in which we live in.
But to do this and put this together, I mean, take away your red or your blue stuff.
It's
fascinating.
Okay, now. The power of President Trump, he knows the power of the office, and he knows how to, you know, get people together. I mean, how did you go from never having a job in politics to being president twice? You understand people. So he is trying to make it a win-win. We can't give the farm away or there goes Taiwan. So how you end the war in Ukraine really will affect the future of Taiwan. But we're not out to humiliate Putin either. So the fact that Putin met him in Alaska was directly related, I think, to him bombing Iran, him putting tariffs on India for buying Russian oil and selling weapons to Ukraine through Europe. I think that rattled Putin.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have another meeting in the works. But just think about this. He had six or seven European leaders, the E3, plus some others, and Zelensky.
Right.
And during the meeting, he got on the phone and called Putin.
Right.
Now, no other president would do that because you're not supposed to do that.
Right.
You know what you're supposed to do? Whatever gets you the outcome you want.
Right.
So he doesn't play the game like other people, and I think that's to the benefit of the country.
I want to ask you something because you have more insight on Donald Trump than probably anybody else at the congressional level, House or Senate. Here's the thing. In the first term, I used to ask this about Mick Mulvaney because he was obviously right there as the chief of staff for a short while.
He did. That's right.
And now with you, I would say there's nobody that bends the ear more of Donald Trump, and he looks to you for counsel on a number of things. Tell us about how he's misunderstood. I mean, help us understand him a little bit more personally.
Well, number one, I play a lot of golf with him. And if you spend 4 hours on a golf course, you get to know somebody pretty well. He's got a wicked sense of humor. The people that work with him have worked with him for years. His club pros, the people who run his organization, are very loyal to him, and he's very good to them. When we play golf, he'll have a wad of money, and he'll give, you know, very generous tips. So he takes care of his people. He expects you to be loyal, but he takes care of his people. The thing I think I could tell people the most about President Trump, he's got the thickest hide of anybody I've ever met. He can take criticism, and he can turn it into energy. And what I would say about President Trump is that in his own way, he wants to help this country go to the next level. The golden age is just not rhetoric. We talked this morning about a facelift for the District of Columbia.
Right.
It's the murder capital of the world. We need to change that. But he said, I had leaders from all over the world, and he's a developer. He talked about he wants me to get him money to do the roads and the mediums. And I mean, he is really unbelievably a developer. And he was talking about how you'd redo the roads. I said, I just trust you. Let me get you the money. And we were playing golf, and there was a crack in the sidewalk. And he said, I want that fixed, but don't use a trowel. You have to get down and do it yourself so it won't be a scar. He has an amazing sense of detail. But what I think about President Trump the most is that his love for the country and his willingness to take a beating to keep this job impresses me. I don't know how some days he gets up in the morning. They try to destroy his life, his family's life, and he keeps on ticking.
There's no off switch either.
Well, again, you know, he's been up for a day flying to Alaska and wants to play golf. He's got a lot of energy. The last thing I think about with President Trump is being 79.
Right.
I never think about his age. He's volatile. He uses that to his benefit. like everybody else, he's not perfect. But he lands where he needs to land. Yeah. It's not how you get a four on a hole, is that you got a four.
Got a four. Yeah. I hear you.
And he may not hit it down the middle.
Right. But it gets there.
But he'll get a four.
Yeah, I get it. We're talking with Lindsey Graham in studio here at The Point. Let me take over to the Middle East. Again, another thing you have is a tremendous relationship with Bibi Netanyahu, and you've known him for years and all.
One of my best friends in the world.
I can't understand something, and obviously you've been staunch in your support for Israel forever. I can't understand, and I'm not saying this as the Jewish guy in the room. I'm saying it as just an American.
Right.
Israel has what happens on October 7th. And obviously America immediately shows some and the yeah. world shows some compassion and, yeah. and bad. And then sure enough, within yeah. a few yeah. weeks of it starting, overreach and yeah. overreaction, all that crap starts all around the world, which you knew was going to happen. Yeah. And this. Now you've got countries after Israel basically has done the world a huge favor in devastating Hamas, Hezbollah, Iran,
the Houthis.
Yeah, I mean, the world is safer because of Israel, Amen. And yet Israel wants to. They want to call Israel war crimes.
Yeah, well, I think I get that asked a lot, and here's the best answer I know how to give. The world doesn't see Israel in a fight for its life. They see this as some kind of conflict where both sides need to be measured, and that you need to not go too far. We didn't think that way after Pearl Harbor. When we got in a war with Japan by being a sneak attack, we were all in to win it. Nobody suggested you feed the Germans or the Japanese. We were in an existential fight for the future of civilization. We dropped two atomic bombs to end the war, and nobody said much of anything because they understood that's what it takes to survive.
Right.
With Israel, people do not understand they're fighting for the very existence of the Jewish state. Hamas's charter is to drive Israel into the sea. From the river to the sea means there are no Israel. Hezbollah has the same charter. Iran is the great Satan. They want to kill all the Jews, purify Islam, and come after us. What I see and what you see is different. We see people with shared values, Israel, and shared enemies, Israel. Same people want to kill them, want to kill us.
Right.
And we understand they're in the fight for their lives. And we blame Hamas for the poor kids and the poverty and
Gaza.
I blame them, not Israel. See, Israel actually could destroy its enemy completely. It could commit genocide. It has the capability. It doesn't have the desire. But if the shoe were on the other foot, do you think Hamas would hesitate 1 second to kill all the Jews?
They've already said they'll do it as soon as they're able to again.
So I'm with Israel. God says those who bless Israel will be blessed by God. You pull the rug on Israel, God will pull the rug on us. I literally believe that. But whether I believe that or not, it's in our national security interest to help Israel because they have the enemies they're fighting hate us too.
The Afternoon Drive with Kev continues now from the Bark Fireside Studios.
In studio with us, we have the pleasure and the privilege of having our United States Senator Lindsey Graham coming to visit us, and we thank him for that very, very much. So we talked a lot about international. Let's talk a little domestic here and what's going on. It's been an amazing 7 months since he took the White House.
Amazing.
What has stood out most to you in the seven
months?
The
border.
Yeah.
Okay, we haven't changed law. We just changed president. We went from the most broken, unsecured border to the most secure in 6 months. He went to Mexico and said, listen, if you don't help me stop the drug problem and the legal immigration problem, I'm going to put tariffs on all your products. It worked. And now we have the most secure border. The Darien Gap in Panama, they were coming by the thousands a day. Last month, they had nobody come across. We're down to a handful of people crossing legally. I want to be the best partner of ICE of all 50 states. The 287G program. Local law enforcement, if they arrest somebody, not for being illegal, but for DUI, and it pops up that you're here illegally, I want them to have a partnership with ICE so they hold them and turn them over to ICE. Biden abandoned that program.
Sure.
And we put $1 billion in it in the One Big Beautiful Bill. I want to create a grant program for those states that will partner with ICE you'll get grants from the federal government to help you recruit and retain law enforcement officers. So I am all in keeping that border secured. The one big beautiful bill was a legislative heavy lift. I was the budget chairman, been on the budget committee for like 10 years and went to one meeting. All of a sudden, I'm the center of the universe. Bottom line is that we got the money for the border, $175 billion, 100,000 new detention beds. Lake and Riley, the young lady was killed in Georgia. Yeah. The man who murdered her was released because there was no place to put him, and he winds up killing her in Georgia.
Right.
It allows you to finish the wall, and it allows you to hire more ICE agents. So what? That's a big success. So $150 billion for the military. They're in a lot of conflicts, and we're able to make the tax cuts permanent, about $2,800 for families. They were all going to expire. The tax credits were going to expire in December this year.
Right.
Now they're permanent.
Right.
And as budget chairman, I helped do that. That's why I think President Trump's been so strong for me, endorsed me early on, is that he sees that I'm not only a friend and ally, but I can get things done. So it's amazing what we've done in 6 months.
All right, so we did international. We've talked a little bit about our country. Let me bring it close to home, South Carolina. You've been a champion for the port. You've been a champion for doing things to make it easier to bring more business to South Carolina. Yeah. What do people in Columbia need to understand about what you've done down in Charleston?
Well, I live in Seneca. And if you live in Irmo, the port's a big deal to both of us.
Mm-hmm.
It's the deepest port on the East Coast. Now, what does that matter? It means if you're a ship looking for a place to dock full of goods, you can come to Charleston 24/7 regardless of the tide.
Right.
A lot of ports can't bring these big ships in unless the tide is with them. So we went to 52 feet. From 45 to 52 took us longer than building the Panama Canal. But we got there. I was dogged about it. Failure's not an option. We got money we couldn't earmark for a while, and I got Harry Reid to help get $150,000 money to continue our work study. We did it together. South Carolina Ford funded the money. I just got the last check back to repay the federal government part. I'm proud of what we did. It is 1 in 9 jobs are directly related to the port. It's 80 something billion dollars of impact on the South Carolina economy. Over half the cars made in Greer at BMW are shipped out of the port of Charleston throughout the world.
Right.
If you're looking to coming here, Boeing, BMW, Michelin, and you're an international company, that port is a godsend. And for 10 years, from 2011 until just a few years ago, I spent a lot of time with my staff making sure that port got to 52 feet. And I'm proud of that. So whether you live in Irmo or Seneca, we want that port to succeed.
When you guys go back, what's got to happen next?
Okay, well, what's going to happen next is we're going to start putting judges on the bench. We're going to change the rules so we can get President Trump's nominees in office. They've been treating him pretty poorly.
Horrible.
I'm going to help lead the charge to change the rules. They're the ones that brought this on. Get as many judges on the bench as we can. Try to do what we can to help Trump end this war and with Russia and Ukraine. Stand behind Israel. And, you know, we've got a lot to do. But I want to focus on getting conservative judges on the bench.
Last thing. You obviously, I mean, you yourself is JAG, I need to have you explain to people in a minute, if you can, why are judges who are not federal judges, we're not talking about Supreme Court judges, we're talking about a judge from this region, a judge from that region,
district
able
court.
To take, yeah, district, why are they able to take executive orders and say, nope?
Federal district court judges should not be allowed to impose a national injunction. There's actually a rule in the Supreme Court preventing that, but it's not very well enforced. If we need legislation, we need legislation. People judge shop. They go to the most liberal districts, federal district judges.
Sure.
They have the power to shut down the entire policy of administration. It works both ways.
I was going to say, I don't blame them for doing it. Yeah.
I don't like that. I think you should have panels of judges issuing national injunctions, not a single judge.
I would be very interested to see how that's because
I'm hoping that
works
itself out soon.
Yeah.
Good to be back.
Thank you.
I'll stay in touch, but pray for our friends in Israel.
Amen.
The coming month or so is going to be very crucial to how this war ends over there.
I hear you. Safe travels to you.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming on in here. Always welcome. You know
all
that.
Right.
Appreciate it.
See you on the radio.
Appreciate it. Senator Lindsey Graham joining us here at The Point. Always great to visit with an old friend.